We are going to have a Bible reading now, and I think John Cleary is going to come and read to us. So thank you, John.
Luke 13, verses 31 to 35. At that time, some Pharisees came to Jesus and said to him, "Leave this place and go somewhere else. Herod wants to kill you." He replied, "Go tell that fox, I will drive out demons and heal people today and tomorrow, and on the third day I will reach my goal. In any case, I must keep going today and tomorrow and the next day, for surely no prophet can die outside Jerusalem. O Jerusalem, Jerusalem, you who killed the prophets and stoned those sent you, how often I have longed to gather your children together as a hen gathers her chicks under her wings. You were not willing. Look, your house is left to you desolate. I tell you, you will not see me again until you say, 'Blessed is he who comes in the name of the Lord.'" Amen.
Thank you, John. Well, thank you very much, John, for that reading from Luke 13. If you've got a Bible, perhaps you'd like to keep it open at Luke chapter 13. It's always good, you know, when someone's preaching that you check up that what is being said is in accordance with what it says in this book. Because if it ain't, come and tell me. Or stand up. I did actually have a man stand up and say rubbish. Actually the same man did it twice in the same church. Once I was speaking rhetorically, but at any rate. But it's okay, you know, if something's been said that isn't right, then you need to say. And if you look just before that passage, if you go back to 13:22, you will see this sentence. "Then Jesus went through the towns and villages, teaching as he made his way to Jerusalem." Now that verse actually sums up the whole of Luke's gospel. Now hopefully you will find a PowerPoint on the screen, hopefully, if our technicals... Oh, there we go. Jesus is on a journey. There's the Holy Land. And in Luke's gospel particularly, he stresses a particular direction for this journey. He starts right up in the north. Oh, I've got one of these. Let's see if this works, shall we? No. Oh, is that right? No, perhaps you can do it from the front, from the back. He starts right up in the north. Well, he starts up in Galilee, which is right up in the north. Oh, right, this will do. Yeah, okay. This is always a problem when you transfer a file from one computer to another. Don't you just love computers? Oh, my goodness, yeah. He starts in Galilee. All of these stories of Luke start up in Galilee, and then he gradually moves south. He has to go through Samaria. Well, he doesn't have to, but he chooses to go through Samaria. And then he comes into Judea, but he's heading for Jerusalem. Yeah. And, of course, we know why he's heading for Jerusalem. He's heading to the cross. This is the journey that Jesus is on in Luke's gospel. Now, if we want to, hopefully the Bible readings will appear here in Galilee. Yes, there we go, Luke 9:18. He starts at a place called Caesarea Philippi, which is right up in the north of that map. And then there's a very key verse here. We just hang on at this verse here. Chapter 9 is the watershed of Luke's gospel. At the beginning, he sends out the 12 in discipleship. Then he feeds 5,000 people. And then comes Peter's confession, "You are the Christ, the Son of the living God." And straight after that confession, as soon as Peter realizes that, Jesus begins to teach his suffering. The gospel changes from emphasis on healing to actually, I'm going to suffer and die. And then we have the transfiguration in the same chapter, where an amazing event where Elijah and Moses appear to Jesus and a couple of his disciples. And then a very key verse, at verse 51, it says, Jesus resolutely set out for Jerusalem. Does it say that in on there? Oh no, doesn't matter. In the old version, in the authorized version, it says he steadfastly set his face on Jerusalem. It's a lovely picture, isn't it? Do you remember when we used to see Usain Bolt on the Olympics? And there was that camera shot right down the track. And there he is on the starting blocks. And his eyes are absolutely stuck on that finishing line. There is no thought in his mind whatsoever in passing that finishing line in less than 10 seconds. Utter concentration. He set his face on the finishing line. Now that's exactly what Jesus has done here. And that is a kind of a reference to a passage in Isaiah 50, where in the third servant song, when Isaiah begins to prophesy about the suffering servant, he says he set his face like flint. The servant will set his face like flint. And that's a wonderful expression, isn't it? There's plenty of flint around here in the Cretaceous rocks. If you go down to Beerhead, it's a very hard rock, and some of our houses are built of it. Very hard. Setting your face like flint. And then after he resolutely sets out, or sets his face like flint on Jerusalem, he begins teaching about the cost of following him. You know, Jesus is not sort of gathering people together for a jolly, is he? Although I'm sure they had some fantastic times, all the miracles and the feedings and healings, all have been wonderful. But actually, Jesus says, where we're going, there is a cost. You must take up your cross and follow me. And so this cross is at the center of the journey in Luke's gospel. But let's just carry on a little bit, because Luke's also quite unique in this. In chapter 19, in verse 1, Jesus enters Jericho. And that's the boundary between Samaria and Judea. He has to go through Jericho in order to enter Judea. And as he comes then up to the Mount of Olives, then we come to the amazing procession of Palm Sunday. And as he comes down that procession, and they're all chanting from that psalm, which we started off, Psalm 118, they're chanting from that psalm, blessed is he who comes in the name of the Lord. And then it says, Jesus then saw the city and he wept. He wept over the city. So we'll come back to that perhaps in a minute. Let's carry on, because thankfully Luke does not end with his gospel. He then carries on, hopefully. When they gather in Jerusalem, he says to them, I will be sending you from Jerusalem to Judea, to Samaria, and to the ends of the world. And it's going to work. Yes. So we can read about that in Acts, the story of how, you see, it all comes together on Jerusalem. And in Luke's gospel, all of the miracles of resurrection all occur in Jerusalem. There are no examples of Sea of Galilee in Luke, only Jerusalem. And then from there, from Judea to Samaria, and there should be the end of the world, I think. There we go. Fantastic. Well done. You can relax. You can relax now. It's all worked. So you can see this is the trajectory that Luke is painting for us on this journey that Jesus. So let's come to today's passage. About time, you said. Let's stick to the passage which we've been given. In verse 31, the Pharisees come to Jesus and say, leave this place because Herod wants to kill you. Does that strike you as an odd thing for the Pharisees to say? Why? You thought the Pharisees wanted to get rid of him, didn't you? What are they doing? Are they trying to protect him? Surely not. They've already decided that they don't want him. So I don't think they're trying to protect him. The second possibility is they may be in cahoots with Herod. And they think maybe if they work in cahoots with Herod, they can get Jesus to go away. Go away to the Samaritans. Oh, they're a grotty old lot. They'll love you, you know, and go and do your ministry up there. We don't care what happens up there. But don't come to Jerusalem. Maybe it was that. Or maybe they were just trying to get rid of him from their area, you know, sweeping under the carpet so that he wasn't any more bother. It's a very strange thing, though, isn't it? But listen to Jesus' reply. Jesus says, go tell that fox. My goodness, is Jesus insulting the ruler of the land? Sounds a bit of an insult, doesn't it? But what do you associate with a fox? What kind of creature? A sly fox. Crafty. Yeah. Sort of always opportunist, looking for, yeah. It's a kind of an expression about crafty, sly kind of creature. Jesus says, go and tell that fox, I will drive out demons and heal today and tomorrow, and on the third day, I will reach my goal. Now, of course, he's not saying he's only going to be there for 3 days. What he's saying, of course, is that I've come here to teach, to heal. That's my ministry. But on the third day, in other words, he's talking about the death and resurrection, I will reach my goal. I will go to the cross and I will rise from the dead. And he's saying he is determined to continue this journey. And no sly fox or sort of temptress is going to stop him from going on the journey that he has set his face on. He's in verse 33, in any case, I must keep going. And he's set his face like flint on that goal of the cross. Now, a few months ago, I had the privilege of being asked to take part in a funeral in my previous church for a lovely elderly Chinese gentleman. And he couldn't speak very, very good English. He'd lived in England since he was about 20 or something like that. But he would often be at the back of the church, and one or two people would be there, and he'd be talking to them. It was like giving wise words to them. And I always thought he was a bit like a Chinese sage. And I sort of likened him to Confucius with his little group of disciples that he was speaking to. So when I spoke at the funeral, I thought, well, I better find out what Confucius said. And Confucius was a Chinese philosopher, wise man, who lived about 350 years before Christ. One of his sayings is this: it does not matter how slowly you go, as long as you do not stop. Isn't that wonderful? So, you know, for some of you folk who are getting a little bit older and can't quite go as fast as you used to, good advice. It does not matter how slowly you go, as long as you keep going, as long as you do not stop. And I keep trying to tell my dad this, because my dad, he's 91, and he still thinks he can do things at a rate of knots. And slow down, please. But keep going. Keep going. Jesus says, in any case, I must keep going, for surely no prophet can die outside Jerusalem. That's a strange motive for going there, isn't it? Yeah. Interestingly, earlier in one of the Gospels, Thomas says to Jesus, let us go and die with you. This is the doubting Thomas, you know, in the resurrection appearances. But actually, he says, we will go there so we can die with you. That's his purpose. Jesus knows that he's going there to die, but he still sets his face like flint and goes. I don't know if you've seen it, but Karen and I sat and watched an incredible storyline documentary about Alexei Navalny. Anyone seen it? Oh my goodness, if you've got BBC iPlayer, it's on BBC 4, Storyville. And it's a documentary about Alexei Navalny, who's the guy that's just mysteriously died after a walk in a prison camp in the Arctic, Siberia. Very, very powerful. And it actually follows him from the time that he's poisoned on the aeroplane, and then he recovers, and the cameras are with him, and the documentary, his wife, and all that happened. And he spends about, 4 months or so in Germany, recuperating. And then he gets on a plane to go back to Russia. He said, "I am not afraid. I was incredibly impressed." And of course, as soon as he gets there, they try and arrest him. In fact, you will see in the documentary that he's meant to fly into one particular airport in Russia, but so many people have crowded into the airport to support him that the authorities divert the aeroplane to another airport to avoid, most impressive man. And apparently after he was poisoned, he came to faith and acknowledged, became an Orthodox Christian. Wow. If you knew what would happen to you if you went back to Russia, would you go? Most of you are shaking your heads. That's right. Unbelievable, but he did. And of course, he has died. And so in verse 34, Jesus laments over Jerusalem. As I said, in chapter 19, he enters Jericho and then the triumphal entry. And as he approached Jerusalem, he saw the city and wept over it. And he says this, "If you had only known what would bring you peace, but now it is hidden from your sight." Because a lot of the Jewish people thought that some kind of powerful ruler was going to come on a horse and an army and deliver them from Roman occupation and give them peace. But that wasn't the plan. It wasn't even plan B. Jesus' plan was to go to the cross. "Now it is hidden from your sight." So why would Jesus weep over Jerusalem? Well, first of all, he was going to die there. But I don't think he was weeping for himself. He knew that was his role. He probably knew that a few years later, in AD 70, through about 35 years, I suppose, after his crucifixion, Jerusalem would be sacked by the Romans and all the Jews kicked out. The end of the Jewish state there. He probably knew that, and he knew all the suffering that was going to happen in AD 70. I don't know whether Jesus would have had any inkling as to the suffering that's gone on in that place in the intervening 2,000 years. I don't know. He was human. He was God, but he was only human, so his understanding was probably limited by his humanity. In fact, he said he didn't even know when he was going to return again. Only God the Father knew that. But if you think about what happened in Jerusalem, all the Crusades in the Middle Ages, all the war and violence that's going on in that part of the world now, no wonder Jesus wept over Jerusalem. And as he laments about the state, he says this, "How often have I longed to gather your children together as a hen gathers her chicks under her wing." So I don't know when you chose this passage, you realize there was a reference to Mother's Day there, but Jesus is likening himself and God his Father to a mother hen with the wings. And if you've seen the chicks, how they all nestle underneath the wings and they get into the down of the feathers that keep them warm while they're growing. Jesus says, "I want to be like that for you." And so we have an image of God not only as a father, but the kind of a female kind of image of God as a loving mother who wants to embrace the children, of course, is what we are. He said, "I long to embrace you like that, but you were not willing." You know, you can't give a kid a hug if he doesn't want to be hugged. And then in the last verse, Jesus foresees. Look, your house is left to you desolate. And as you probably know, there's only a few rocks left from the temple, from Herod's temple. The Wailing Wall, that's all that's left, a few of those foundation. The whole city was razed to the ground. Then Jesus finishes with these words, you will not see me again until you say, blessed is he who comes in the name of the Lord. Where's he quoting from? Psalm 118. The processional psalm, the psalm that the pilgrims would have chanted as they went down into Jerusalem to celebrate the Passover. So as Jesus enters on Palm Sunday, that's what the people chant. Blessed is he who comes in the name of the Lord. He's coming to set us free. Only they didn't know how he was going to do that. So it points to Palm Sunday. It points to the Passover. It points to future glorification when the Son of Man comes to set creation free. And it points to what happens beyond Jerusalem, that Jesus starts in Samaria, in the Galilee, comes through Samaria to Judea, to Jerusalem, to the cross, and then his disciples go from Jerusalem to Judea, to Samaria, to the ends of the world. And we're sitting here today. Isn't that great? So we're part of that, where those little arrows are, we're part of that story. We are participants in this incredible journey that Jesus is on. I thought probably the best place to end this is actually to read Psalm 118. So, I will. I tell you what, if anyone's got a Bible in the NIV, just read it together. I'll read it, and then you've got to read along, that will be great. This is the processional psalm, so we can be participants in this procession going towards Jerusalem. Give thanks to the Lord, for he is good. His love endures forever. Let Israel say, his love endures forever. Let the house of Aaron say, his love endures forever. Let those who fear the Lord say, his love endures forever. In my anguish I cried to the Lord, and he answered by setting me free. The Lord is with me, I will not be afraid. What can man do to me? The Lord is with me, he is my helper. I will look in triumph on my enemies. It's better to take refuge in the Lord than to trust in man. It's better to take refuge in the Lord than to trust in princes. All the nations surrounded me, but in the name of the Lord I cut them off. They surrounded me on every side, but in the name of the Lord I cut them off. They swarmed around me like bees, but they died out as quickly as burning thorns. In the name of the Lord I cut them off. I was pushed back and about to fall, but the Lord helped me. The Lord is my strength and my song. He has become my salvation. Shouts of joy and victory resound in the tents of the righteous. The Lord's right hand has done mighty things. The Lord's right hand is lifted high. The Lord's right hand has done mighty things. I will not die, but live. And I will proclaim what the Lord has done. The Lord has chastened me severely, but he has not given me over to death. Open for me the gates of righteousness. I will enter and give thanks to the Lord. This is the gate of the Lord through which the righteous may enter. I will give you thanks, for you have answered me. You have become my salvation. The stone the builders rejected has become the capstone. The Lord has done this, and it is marvelous in our eyes. This is the day the Lord has made. Let us rejoice and be glad in it. O Lord, save us. O Lord, grant us success. Blessed is he who comes in the name of the Lord. From the house of the Lord we bless you. The Lord is good, and he has made his light shine upon us. With bows in hand, join in the festal procession up to the horns of the altar. You are my God, and I will give you thanks. You are my God, and I will exalt you. And you all can do this bit. Give thanks to the Lord, for he is good. His love endures forever. Amen. What a great psalm. You can imagine going into Jerusalem, chanting that with all of the believers.